TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. End of industrial civilization and wild dreams of a new beginning. Here's Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
A Pacific tidal wave, 1 mile high, sweeps in. Los Angeles breathes its last gasp and sinks into the sea like the Titanic, all lights lit. 9 minutes later, the seas coming over Utah, Mormon tabernacles washed away like barnacles. Willa Cather's Nebraska sinks with it. Coyotes are confounded and swim nowhere. An orchestra on stage in Omaha keeps on playing Handel's water music. Horns filled with water and bass players float away on their instruments, clutching them like lovers horizontal. Chicago's loop becomes a roller coaster. Skyscrapers filled like water glasses. Great lakes mixed with Buddhist brine. Great books watered down in Evanston. Milwaukee beer topped with sea foam. Bow flub of buffalo suddenly becomes salt. Manhattan Island swept clean in 16 seconds. Buried masts of New Amsterdam arise as the great wave sweeps on eastward to wash away overage Camembert Europe. Manhattan steaming in sea vines. The washed land awakes again to wilderness. The only sound, a vast thrumming of crickets, a cry of seabirds high over. In empty eternity. As the Hudson retakes its thickets, and Indians reclaim their canoes.
That was the poem Wild Dreams of a New Beginning, written in 1974, almost 40 years ago, which is quite amazing given the images of the mile-high tidal wave that sweeps over Los Angeles, which sinks like the Titanic, all lights lit, and Manhattan Island swept clean in 16 seconds. And as the great wave sweeps on eastward to Europe, the washed land awakes again to wilderness, and the Indians reclaim their canoes. The recording and sound design was by Jim McKee. This was part of a collaboration between Ferlinghetti, Jim McKee, Eric Bauersfeld, and me, Mariah Gelarden. And the poem was part of an art exhibition in early 2010 in the small former logging town off Willits, California. Everything was built around the theme, End of Industrial Civilization. There were three other poems and two paintings by Ferlinghetti, and collages, photos from Indian reservations, and sculptures assembled from early settler junk, like broken stoves, bread boxes, and saws, by me. The month-long show also included a small library with The Air-Conditioned Nightmare by Henry Miller and Kirkpatrick Sale's article, Lessons from the Luddites. Kirkpatrick Sale had written in The Nation in 1995 that we need to set limits on technology, quote, "As our own daily experience has convinced us, we in the industrial world are in the middle of a social and political revolution that is almost without parallel. Call it third wave capitalism, or postmodern, or multinational, or whatever. This transformation is, without anyone being prepared for it, overwhelming the communities and institutions and customs that once were the familiar stanchions of our lives. As Newsweek said in a special issue that actually seemed to be celebrating it, this revolution is, quote, outstripping our capacity to cope, antiquating our laws, transforming our mores, reshuffling our economy, reordering our priorities, redefining our workplaces, putting our constitution to the fire. Resistors to industrial civilization, Kirkpatrick Sale said, could find their most useful models in the 19th century Luddites, who fought the introduction of the huge mechanized looms and child labor. Quote, it was not all machinery that the Luddites opposed, but all machinery hurtful to commonality. As a March 1812 letter to a hated manufacturer put it, machinery to which their community did not give approval, over which it had no control, and the use of which was detrimental to its interests. Those were the criteria of the Luddites. The town of Willits is itself a victim of industrialization. In only 140 years from the first hydropowered sawmill in 1850 to the closing of the last industrial-sized sawmill, a redwood forest that included trees up to 3,000 years old and had taken tens of thousands of years to establish itself had disappeared, and with it the local economic base. Now a few tourists can get on the skunk train, the former logging railroad, and drive through the thin stands of second and third growth trees and know not what they see. The reason why I was looking forward to organizing an art show around that theme was that I knew that the idea of resistance was already anchored in the community where I and TUC Radio now live. There were two important victories. In 2004, voters in Mendocino County approved the nation's first ban on genetically engineered plants or animals. That in spite of Monsanto spending $500,000 on just 47,000 voters. 5 years later, Mendocino County was targeted by an out-of-state corporate developer. They introduced Measure A to bypass county planning and zoning and allow yet another huge retail project on land that the community hopes to save for small industry and well-paying jobs. The Ohio corporation DDR and a Texas developer shelled out most of the $1 million spent to pass Measure A. With only $100,000 raised at many happy events, house parties, and concerts, the community did mailings, posters, and phone campaigns. Measure A lost almost 2-1 in November 2009. In context of that community experience, the art show opened as a participatory event. We invited people to fill in a playful survey that asked, how far back in time would we have to go for a happy, sustainable, and independent life? And to get things rolling, the survey gave a couple of examples. Obama declares in Copenhagen that 2005 is far back enough to save us from climate collapse. The environmental writer Derek Jensen writes that the Stone Age was the last sustainable period. What do you think? The second question was, what can you live without? And it gave a few examples to pick from, among them an electric toaster. And it turns out that not all that many people are ready to give up toast. Walmart, surprisingly, quite a few teenagers like the store. Almost everybody was ready to give up soft drinks, bottled water, plastic bags, fast food, industrial meat, and synthetic mood-altering drugs, such as Prozac and even TV. Cars and cell phones were tricky. In this area, they are for some the only means of transportation or communication. What was most intriguing, though, were the additions that people made. Corporations show up a lot in the section of what we want to live without. Also, electricity, cement, asphalt, nationalism, air travel, department stores, fast-moving metallic objects, banks, even computers, and children of my own. What moved me was that people referred to the emotional toll that industrial civilization exerts. I want to live without stress or fear, competition, hate, or war, many said. Halfway through the art show, we invited the community to a party and benefit for the Willard Center for the Arts, the local radio station KZYX, and TUC Radio. On that evening, we had spaces for community groups to bring their displays. Musicians had donated their time and agreed to play without amplification to show that we are not entirely dependent on electricity. An art show theme party for the end of industrial civilization had never happened in anybody's memory. And as board members of the Arts Center were preparing the food and seats, and KZYX staffers were setting up the bar with local organic donated wine, we wondered if more than a few people would show. But an hour after opening, the place was packed, and the last guests left reluctantly around 11 p.m., which is very, very late for a rural community on a dark winter night. While the party unfolded in the ballroom upstairs, and I was talking with guests in the gallery on the ground floor, my friend and local radio producer Annie Esposito interviewed people on the question of the survey. What can you live without? And how far back for a happy, sustainable, independent life? The first person she spoke to was Tom Allman, the popular sheriff of Mendocino County. And I must say that in this first public event that I had in my new home county, I took it as a very good omen that he had come and had a good time. Here comes the sheriff, followed by Liz, Dale, Tony, Charlie, Luis, Marilyn, Deborah, Mike, Tamara, and Anne.
What do you think? Could you live without your squad car?
Well, I could if others could live without their cars. How's that? If we're all on an equal basis, of course.
Sure.
It's an interesting concept right now of picking and choosing what we'd like to live without, because honestly, I think that a realist would say that in our life, we're not going to have the luxury of picking and choosing what we're going to live without. We're going to be either forced or told what to live without. And it's interesting to be in a role of society right now and where we are, where fortunately we are talking about things that we could possibly live without, or we could, not possibly, but we will live without. But I don't see anybody really and truly making a big change to do it. It's like the weather. Everybody talks about it, and no one does anything about it. Mark Twain said that.
Yeah, she's a truth.
I feel so yoked to the wheel, so tangled up into infernal combustion that I just don't know quite how to scale down, how to break the addiction.
I think the reason why we're doing this is to try and let people know there is an alternative, that people are thinking about the future, that economic localization, environmentalism is alive and well in Mendocino County, and a good example is right here in Willis tonight, that people can come together and make a difference. It just has to be something that has to happen now, not later.
Now.
Antidepressants.
People are flushing them down.
And what were you saying about Prozac?
Oh, I just said that they're finding in municipal water treatment facilities that there's an inability to remove antidepressants from the water treatment facility. So there's a bunch of really mellow fish and frogs.
Now that's depressing. So what did you find that you could do without?
Oh, I could do without almost everything. I got down to any meat, and I had to put a little fish over here and say, no, I can't do without all meat right now.
What's going on in your mind right now?
Well, I love the photographs, and this list is interesting because it asks, pick a year, how far to go back in time for a happy, sustainable, and independent life. And I actually have been thinking about that the last couple of days, not knowing she was going to have this, and I'm having a hard time because we'd have to go back awfully far, I think, to live a sustainable and independent life. I've just been reading a book that talks about the life of Galileo, and back that far, it certainly wasn't sustainable. So I think we'd have to go back very far. But if anyone can do it, I think us here in Mendo County can do it.
The best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. But the second best time is today. As long as we have today, we have not lost our chance. So when Mariah handed out this little survey, I wrote, you know, how far back in time do you have to go? We don't have to go back in time at all. Today is the moment. One of the most interesting books I've read in the last couple of years is by Jared Diamond, called Collapse.
That is an interesting book because he really makes the point that people do decide what's going to happen based on the choices that they make, and whether your society succeeds or fails has to do with how you treat your environment.
Right.
So, Luis, what do you think about the implications around this event?
I think it's wonderful. Witness the turnout tonight. We have an enormous turnout. I haven't done a head count, but every chair is filled and then some. And so there's a serious interest in ecology and preserving our town, our county.
All of this 21st century stuff is just getting us into trouble. And I think it's going to come down to individuals, families, communities doing their thing and forging ahead and certainly not expecting government or military or the big churches or anything to do all this stuff for us. We've got to do it ourselves and get back in touch with the old ways and keep what's good of the new ways, because there are some good things. There are some good things. Yeah, I really like plumbing. Hot and cold running water.
I live and work in Round Valley. I've been there for 5 years, and in the last 5 years have worked within the community establishing school gardens and connections between local farms and local tribal families.
You must have resonated with the kind of exhibit and the theme of this event of sustainability.
Absolutely. Many of the pictures actually have students who I work with now, you know, 10 years ago, singing "This Land Is Our Land." Yeah, and that's pretty nice stuff.
I'm really welcome the Native American orientation of the show. Yes, my friend Tom Bodoni is in one of the pictures, and I pray for him and for Corbin, who passed on a few years ago. I pray that his work can be carried on effectively by all of us.
The message of the show is what consumes me mostly between 3 and 5 in the morning every day of my life. And so to, you know, make the conversation larger, I'm so grateful.
I think that we're going down fast, and I think it's going to be a real race to see if we can create an alternative structure that can pull us through, food-wise, and having to do with, you know, the industrialization and what that's done to people's souls, and what these people with the souls that we now have are doing to each other and to the planet. It's an epic biblical tragedy.
Seems like people in Willits have been really studying self-sufficiency, the localization.
I think in Willits, people are making a start, but we have a very long ways to go. And you know, I mean, we probably grow less than 1% of our food that we eat, and you know, we need probably at least 65% of the food that we eat. And if that food goes away, then our 1%, we need more. So, but it's a start.
You're involved with Paleotechnic, so
That must have resonated with you when Mariah had people answer the question, how far back in time would they go to be sustainable?
It's a good question, actually. I was thinking about it a lot, and it's a hard one for me to figure out a year, because, I mean, the stuff I do started 1.5 million years ago, and so I definitely think we've been sustainable a lot more recently than that. I always have resonated with this thing that agriculture possibly was the worst mistake in the history of the human race, so maybe going back to hunter-gatherer cultures all around the world is where we started losing it. I think early agriculture, or agriculture is done in a balanced way, it can be done sustainably. And with the population that we have on the world right now, hunting and gathering isn't sustainable. I mean, that we would eradicate all of our wild natural resources if we tried to support the population that we have now on agriculture is sort of a necessity. What I believe is that we have our history and embracing the past and understanding the wisdom of people and their understanding of how to do things, but also like embracing the parts of our modern world that are really helpful and applicable and do help us out.
We didn't have to, but I'm sorry.
What did you call that? The goddess?
Thing.
What do you think about the plight of civilization?
Well, Annie, I've been worried about it for 40 years, and it looks like things are actually starting to crack and fall apart. And what's blooming through the broken asphalt are beautiful little flowers, kind of wildflowers. It's struggling to see the light, but they're getting stronger.
These were some of the guests at an art show theme party for the end of industrial civilization at the Willits Center for the Arts. Many thanks to the board and volunteers of the Arts Center and to KZYX, who had the confidence that such a strange party could be fun for all involved and a success. And thanks to Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who had suggested the title End of Industrial Civilization and lent two of his paintings, Autogeddon, that shows a prone woman below the grill and lights of a Humvee, and his impassioned, huge graffiti painting, Homo Sap, shortened from Homo Sapiens, too stupid and too greedy to save himself from eco-oblivion. It's good to remember a few details from his amazing life. Some know him only as the founder of the famous City Lights bookstore in San Francisco, or only as a publisher, or only as a poet. Very few know that he painted before he wrote poetry. And some don't know him at all, since he has become sort of a literary treasure that sits on a bookshelf, not the energetic 91-year-old who's heading for Italy in April 2010, to attend a 60-year retrospective of his paintings, and that's in the Museo di Roma in Trastevere. Ferlinghetti overcame overwhelming odds. He was born in Yonkers in 1919. His father died 6 months before he was born, and his mother was committed to an asylum shortly after his birth. He was raised by his French aunt, Emily. Ferlinghetti served in the U.S. Navy in World War II as a commander of a subchaser and gave backup for the Normandy invasion. He saw Nagasaki 6 weeks after its destruction and became an instant pacifist. In 1951, Ferlinghetti moved to San Francisco and co-founded City Lights Books and Publishing House. They began with a pocket poet series aimed to create an international dissident ferment. Ferlinghetti's publication of Allen Ginsberg's Howl in 1956 led to his arrest on obscenity charges, and the trial that followed drew national attention to the San Francisco Renaissance and Beat Movement writers. Ferlinghetti's 1958 Coney Island of the Mind continues to be the most popular poetry book in the U.S., with nearly 1 million copies in print. He was and remains a very prolific writer. Ferlinghetti wrote He Said It All into my copy of Henry Miller's Air-Conditioned Nightmare that I kept on display with the art show. Ferlinghetti told me that his first unease with industrialism in the U.S. was inspired by Miller's writing. After living in France for 10 years, Miller took a 3-year tour of the U.S. beginning in 1939. In his diary, he wrote of mass media that are both sophoric and violent, of giant industries deadening workers and polluting the environment, of credit buying cheap cars and gadgets ad infinitum, of misinformation and prejudice. Miller's conclusion was that, quote, nowhere in the world is the divorce between man and nature so complete. This program goes out to all who are inspired to contemplate the problems with industrial civilization and begin to set the limits of what they are willing to accept. Yes, these are scary times, but more and more people believe that even more scary is to stay within the constraints of the industrial and monetary culture we are in. I know that because I'm listening to the news of communities who are resisting coal mining and toxic dumps and nuclear power plants and feedlots and monster malls and urban development and biotechnology and weather modification and geoengineering, and the list is much, much longer. Ample opportunity for all. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. You heard a documentary from the TUC Radio archives, recorded at an art show by Lawrence Ferlinghetti and me, entitled End of Industrial Civilization. This program is dedicated to Ferlinghetti. In January of 2010, he lent me two major paintings, Autogeddon and Homo Sap, and the poem Wild Dreams of a New Beginning, for an exhibition at the Center for the Arts. That's in the small Northern California town of Willits. He also gave the title End of Industrial Civilization. 7 years later, Ferlinghetti said that we had chosen the wrong title. Instead of End of Industrial Civilization, we should have named it Dismantling Industrial Civilization. Here's a postscript. The rebroadcast of this documentary was meant to honor Lawrence Ferlinghetti on his 102nd birthday, March 24. City Lights Publishers just announced that he died last night on February 22nd, 2021. They said that he continued to write and publish new work up until he was 100 years old. His curiosity was unbounded and his enthusiasm was infectious. And we will miss him greatly. End quote. I agree. And I thank you for having shared the record of an event that would not have happened without Lawrence Ferlinghetti's inspiration. My name is Mariah Gallardon. Thank you for listening.